yeah. always about an like identity would, crisis right. or trying to figure out what does it mean to be South Asian.
What a stupid idea.
I know. What?
Honestly.
Don't do a podcast about
it. Trying to figure that out, yeah. dorks.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Warm 94.9.
I mean, you're trying so
I'm so hard right now because we just did a test and I sounded terrible.
Oh,
and
you
I
wanted sound to fix great. That.
Welcome to another episode of American Desis. I'm Arjun.
I'm Akash, sounding amazing on the microphone.
Today we have on somebody that I actually met just recently, a couple months ago at a birthday party. Or no, it was to introduce this dude's wife to everybody. And we got into a fascinating conversation and I was really excited to bring her on. Here we go. We have Mega.
Hello.
Mega's here. She is a producer. She is a businesswoman. She is a filmmaker with her husband, which we will get into later in the episode. And she's also starting a new enterprise, Super Duper Princesses.
Super Duper Princess Heroes.
Super Duper Princess Heroes. Which
it's
is
a
just,
mouthful, yes.
Which, but it's just the best title.
No,
it just
amazing.
Makes me want to like have fun.
Yeah, and I think it's just such a great... way to introduce young girls to really thinking about who they want to be and that they could be anything that they that boys can be and more. And so it's the idea of not letting them get away from the princess narrative, but also combining it with strength and power and beauty through being a superhero.
I'm not gonna lie, that I don't know if it was this Super Bowl, I think it was last Super Bowl, where they had the Run Like a Girl ad.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I got, it hit me. It resonated. I definitely felt chills and some sort of emotions. Could you remember that commercial?
Yeah, no, it didn't hit me at all.
I know. <'cause laughs>
I was like, run like a girl. Oh, so a couple seconds slower than the male record?
Oh, oh God. Man.
There it is.
Got it. Noted. I got it.
But that's a basis. I mean, that's really one of the bases for really empowering young girls. And so that when they become women, they're even more empowered to do wonderful things.
I had this question because my boy Carlton Bird, he's a young black man from Fort Myers. And mm-hmm. we once were having a conversation because he started to be interested in writing children's books mm-hmm. where the superheroes are young black kids.
Oh, nice.
Because he was saying that when he was a kid, he had an experience where he asked his mom, he's like, I wanted to be white. Can I be a superhero? Because mm-hmm. only other superheroes were white. And, you know, and it was an interesting thing where it was like already, you know, that narrative was taught to him that there's something that he can't be. Because he wasn't seeing it reflected back. Are you hoping to change that narrative for young women through this superhero princess hero, super duper princess hero, super duper?
Yes. I mean, I have always been a proponent for years for, I would say, like grassroots artists and entertainers and spoken word artists. And in addition to that, I've always wanted women to have a place where they feel empowered. And it was so much because I never saw myself anywhere.
Mm.
I never saw an Indian girl on television. And we're so lucky that today we do see that.
Mm-hmm.
But growing up, I never saw that. Right. And it was rare. If I did, it was very rare. And we also didn't see, like, you guys on campus. Like in terms of like doing podcasts like this, like it was rare again.
Right.
And so I really wanted to create an environment where people felt like they could see themselves in arts and culture and in media. And so it's been this kind of idea for years. And so, yeah, I do hope that when people see themselves, young girls, we have an Indian princess, we have a Chinese princess,
mm-hmm.
we have all these global princesses.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have mixed race princesses too.
Right.
So when they see these princesses, they not only see themselves, but they see that they have these powers within themselves that they can do and be anything. And one of our taglines is be you, be powerful, be a super duper princess hero. So the first thing is be you,
right.
Be whoever you are. And in that gain power. And then you're just a super duper princess hero.
I want to ask about one of the things that we were fascinated about when we were, you know, when we were doing our background research on you,
mm-hmm.
was that you also have an MBA.
Yes.
So, from Columbia, not as any bum-ass MBA.
So my question for you was it always a question, was it always a desire for you to merge your art with the commerce, or was it that you started as a, did your MBA and then transitioned to the arts? Like, what was that journey for you?
God, that's a great question.
Man. Bro, I thought of that question before the interview. What you talking about? We asked that on the phone. That was my question.
That definitely was not.
God.
I've thought about that. You know, I was a penis.
You thought about it. I thought about it. Arjun did not think about it. He didn't give it no thought. Shut up and be honest with the people.
First of all, you really want honesty right now?
I don't even know what that means.
I don't either.
I will say, when I was young, I danced. I did bar nutdam growing up. Partly because my dad wanted to have his daughters in dance, and so we did that. And then I did piano and gymnastics, and somewhere in between, I think it was like around fourth or fifth grade, I felt like I wanted to be important. Like, I didn't feel like all these other things, dance or all those things, made me important in the eyes of uncles and aunties, even though those were amazing things to me.
Yeah.
And so
it's such a fascinating way that we appreciate art, because I don't know a culture that is more artistic than the South Asian culture. I mean, art is everywhere,
exactly.
And yet it's not lifted at all. It's treated as like a hobby.
Yes.
In this
very
wild,
much so.
It's so fascinating to me
So people would be like, oh, you're a dancer, but what do you want to do when you grow up?
Right.
Right. So it's never like, oh, I could become this dancer, I could become this artist, or I could do these things. So I quickly started to, you know, and then most Indians and South Asians are just smart in school. So it wasn't like I wasn't, that's a generalization, but it wasn't like, fact is fact, girl. So we were all in these honors classes. So of course, you know, I was in honors math or honors science or whatever the it was at the time. And I thought quickly, okay, what am I going to do so I gain the respect of those around me? And I just said, I'm going to be a scientist.
That's dope. Real quick, those around you was Indian uncles and aunties.
Yeah.
It wasn't like
friends. It wasn't.
That's a good daughter.
Yeah.
That's a good daughter.
Let's talk about actually the community that within you grow up, mm-hmm. wherever. What was that community like? Where did you grow up, actually? First
I grew up actually not too far from here. We're in Santa Monica. I grew up in Palos Verdes and Torrance.
Okay,
cool. And at that time, was there a sizable South Asian population?
Yes, yeah. And I mean, my parents came here in the early 70s,
mm-hmm.
and they found an incredible group of like-minded aunties and uncles.
Right.
And my mom she's a CPA, and like a lot of her friends were doctors or lawyers. So, I mean, I grew up with a lot of empowered women and just incredible. Like,
was it important for them for you to be a part of a community of a South Asian community? Was that important? Did you grow up with an emphasis on tradition and emphasis on, or was there a big conversation about assimilation?
No, I mean, I actually felt most at ease around South Asians.
Wow.
And
okay, cool.
It's kind of an interesting paradigm, because I don't know what my husband would answer to that, because he grew up.
Oh, we'll find out very soon.
But he grew up a little bit differently. I had a lot of Indians or South Asians around me, and we didn't really differentiate between like if someone was from Pakistan or from India. We had friends from everywhere.
Right.
Right.
And then dance, and I was doing bar nutdam, so I had. Like, I just learned so much about India, because a lot of my dance friends were South Indian. I'm Gujarati. Then my parents.
Is Bharatanatyam a South Indian mm-hmm. dance?
It's a South Indian dance form.
I didn't know that.
You don't know much.
I don't know much. Honestly, there's things about that I don't know.
Yeah, it's a South Indian dance form. So I had to learn, you don't learn Tamil or Telugu or Kannada, but you, because of the performances and because of some of the songs and traditions, you end up being assimilated into those kinds of cultures and meanings and so forth. And so, yeah, I had a very Indian upbringing.
Did that transition when you went to college?
Yes, it did. It actually, well, no, just kidding. It actually, I became even more Indian, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, I
find that we've found that a lot of people have the opposite sort of situation. They whatever they happened throughout college, they kind of have a chance in college to go the opposite way and then find balance. It's interesting to hear that you went further.
Yeah,
where was college for you?
UCLA.
Oh, so it's all been... Okay, so yeah. Until you saw the light and came to the East Coast for your MBA.
Yeah, and that's when I actually moved out of being just fully Indian. And part of it too is I grew up with all these friends and family. We're all the same age, and they all went to UCLA. Right. So I never quite escaped.
So your community just kind of
I never quite escaped the community. And people I hadn't like seen for years, like we all ended up freshmen at UCLA, or they were older classmen or whatever. But it was great. I mean, it was like everyone I knew basically on campus from the Indian side.
Do you mind if I ask about you said that you felt more at ease within a South Asian community. Did you feel unease around non-South Asian people, or was it just that you felt more comfortable?
I wouldn't say I felt unease. I don't think it's unease. I just felt more comfortable. And okay. I think partly it's because I just saw myself. Like, I had a lot of girlfriends my age, so we would... For some reason, our parents trusted us to go hang out and go to concerts and try different things. I don't know that they would have trusted me so much with other people. Not that they didn't think they were.
No, but there's an understanding of culture. There's an understanding mentality. Of like you are if your parents say, hey, come home at 10, you probably know that they're culturally we respect our elders to the point where we're going to listen to it a little bit more. There's less whether that's right or wrong. And people can make an argument that rebellion is important. And I wouldn't necessarily disagree. But our culture, that's not as prevalent. Mm-hmm. Or at least not as openly prevalent.
Yeah. But I think my parents just trusted that if I was out with my girlfriends, Mona and Pyle and
What up, Mona and Pyle? How you living? How you living today?
It just made sense. Like it all was better around. Yeah.
Did they know their parents? Was it like...
Yeah.
That's probably why, right? Like you had a similar upbringing to me, I think, where your parents' friends had kids... Mm-hmm. And then y'all all became friends.
Yes.
And you're probably still friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go back. You said that you wanted to be a scientist.
Yeah.
So did that happen while you were in high school? Or did that happen when you were in college? Like, talk
like
us through
around
that.
Like middle school is when I...
Early?
Yeah. Okay, I mean, I wanted to be a doctor, which then it translated into being a scientist.
But were you conscious that it was... Or is this in hindsight that you were conscious that it was like for seeking an external validation?
I think it's in hindsight because...
Right. So at that time, it was just... Yeah.
Because I wanted to be an architect. And I remember one time my uncle... Because I was actually quite good at perspective drawing and I did an internship in high school with an architectural firm and I got into Cornell's architectural program like for a summer. And I was so excited. I remember this one uncle said, but that's great. How are you going to make money? And and looking back, like it's amazing, like those kinds of sentences like can impact decisions that you make if you don't have, and I don't think I had that sense of, oh, I can do whatever I want and I don't really care what this uncle says.
But also you were in middle school. I mean, like that is the time where everything means something to you because you're in a highly impressionable age.
Exactly.
You know? So you wanted to be an architect, then you went to science, and then
This is because the time, because you want to be a scientist, then in high school you did the architecture.
Yeah. Yeah, and so it just like every time I deviated to wanting to be... Fine. Yeah,
you got
thanks.
Pushed back.
She's just an idiot.
Every time I deviated and wanted to go towards something artistic or something more creative or something more different, I felt pushback. And some of it probably was me pushing back too, and some of it was probably...
You started to internalize that.
Yeah, I started to internalize it, and then I started to take what other people said.
So then when did arts come in? When did that happen? When did that transition?
In college.
After? Okay, so before the MBA.
Yeah, before the MBA.
Okay, cool.
In college, I started to, I was at UCLA, I was part of World Arts and Culture, the Cultural Affairs Commission, where we would put jazz reggae concerts on.
Oh, wow.
Spoken word concerts, and then we did just a bunch of like hip hop type of events. And
as
then,
we do.
Yeah.
As we do. We love the hip hop.
And then dance and other cultures. And so I started to do a lot more of that. And I just got more energized by that world than I did being a biochemistry major.
Man, and that just sounds harsh. that made me tired just hearing that word.
But it was great because I never have used biochemistry since UCLA, but I learned a lot. And I did, you know, I learned a lot of physics, a lot of math.
Did you finish out that major or did you switch?
I finished it out.
Wow.
I finished it out.
I'm so impressed.
So you finished college and then what was next? Did you go straight into your MBA or
I worked at Deloitte Consulting.
Wow.
So I went,
shouts to Deloitte, employing mad young Indians.
He's only saying that because his girl's about to start working over there.
Oh, really?
I'm going to be living off of for a minute. So shouts.
It does pay well. Shouts.
What are we talking about out here?
I mean, I ain't angry at it. We finally got to have some money.
Yeah. You should go travel with her.
I'll tell you what don't pay is the arts, kids, if you're listening. I'll tell you this right now.
And that's what my uncle said.
I'm doing just fine.
He is. Yes. He is. I'm not.
Okay, so you started at Deloitte. Mm-hmm. So was arts, how did you integrate arts into your, because you said that arts in college came back into your life. How were you integrating it? Were you trying to just integrate it on the side, or when did you switch focusing like, yo, I want to make this my life?
On the side, with Deloitte was on the side because I was traveling all the time, which you'll see very soon with your girlfriend. And so it was really difficult. It was so difficult to do anything but work. But in the middle of that, somehow I convinced one of the partners at Deloitte to move me to New York City.
Word.
Okay. And he did. And then I worked at the e-business strategy group in New York. And from there, I felt something about the city. I felt like I was in a bigger city than LA. I'd grown up in LA my entire life. And so it just felt so awesome being in New York City. And I just had more time for some reason. And so that's when I started truly integrating arts into what I was doing. And I worked with the Indo Arts Council there. I worked at Asia Society, and I just
Asia Society's great.
I just started putting on these cool events and doing things that it kept me energized.
Now, were you there at the time when Reka was doing a lot of stuff then, and a lot of that generation? Because that was one of the things that I was really excited about our conversation. You've been part of that generation that started with, like, you worked with the ones before you, and you're kind of like kind of that bridge for us, which is exciting in that, like, you know the history.
How long is this question? That's crazy. You're still asking this question. Don't get to the heart of the question.
You want
to
add some value to this podcast?
I don't be adding value, man. We know this about me.
Were you working with that community at that time?
Mm-hmm.
Because I want to know what that lineage was and where we're going with it.
So DJ Reka and several of those, I feel like they're old school. You know, they've been there. They were the reason that I got interested in wanting to be part of Asia Society and Indo Arts Council. So I learned a lot from them. I mean, I doubt she would even know who I am, but I learned a lot from going to her parties and meeting people and going to different gallery openings and just meeting artists that were up and coming at that time. And then I think it was the second year I was there in New York, we revived what was called the Diasporatics Art Festival. So it's like the sister festival of Art Walla here in Los Angeles, which I was also part of.
We interviewed D Loco.
Yeah. He was part of my generation at Art Walla. So
cool.
It was those were incredible artists that we were all there in our 20s and just like learning about, you know, art and South Asian and being South Asian. And so it was really cool.
Yeah, there wasn't really a community. One of the things we had talked about was like who had been out there for us to see in the mainstream. And, you know, for me growing up, it was Ajay, it was Asif.
Mm-hmm.
And, it, you know,
only for me, it was only Ajay and one movie, Office Space.
Yeah.
I didn't know anybody else.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a certain ignorance that I have of like some of the names you're talking about, Ompuri and what he.
Because if you're in the scene, you see it. If you're not, if you're just some kid in Texas, you only see the ones in the movies or whatever. And at that time, there was nothing.
No, so mainly it became for me Will Smith and Cosby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's why a lot of us.
And that's what, I mean, kind of what we grew up with. And then there's this, I would say in like the 90s and early 2000s is when you started to see this mass. Like all of us growing up, the second generations. Are we called second generations if our parents immigrated?
We've had this debate so many times.
We've had this debate. I don't know. I've been. It's both. I mean, I see us as first generation simply because we were first ones that were born here. But the second generation thing makes sense because our parents immigrated here, and to some degree,
I see us as first because we craft the identity to a large degree.
Sure, but I can't. I don't know, how do you feel about it? Because our immigrant parents that come in, I think they shape our identity too. I mean, we have to respond to the identity that they've created, which is a lot of them being professionals, a lot of them coming in at that time. So I don't know. I don't know really.
I don't know what the right answer is. But I can see your point, Arjun, because I feel like my parents came in their early 20s here. So they kind of grew up here.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that my parents will always identify as Indian, but I mean, in some ways, they've been here longer.
Exactly.
They have, but they have. They brought, to me, our parents brought Indian culture over. They were Indian, raised us Indian, but we grew up Indian American. Because we had American influence everywhere except home.
Right.
Yeah.
So we kind of craft what it is to be Indian American.
That's true. That's true. So I guess us first generation folks, that our parents who came here in the 70s, we finally were like coming of age in the 90s and early 2000s. And I think that's the group that really, that's the part of the group that I've been a part of. And we just watching them become artists and trying new things and doing American They See and all these things that have happened over the course of the last 15, 20 years.
That was a big movie for me. I remember watching that movie and being like, oh, wow. Like, it was called, I mean, it didn't tap into mainstream hugely, but it was big in the community.
Yeah.
I mean, it was definitely something that we talked about. So when did the NBA come in, and then why the NBA?
I was like, what am I going to do now? Because I've been working at Deloitte and then I moved over to another firm. I wanted a master's degree and the MBA just seemed the most logical at the time.
Was that still coming from that desire as the inner child in you?
No, that business degree was, and this is so bizarre, but I remember one time when we visited New York and we went on Wall Street. And I had this image that I always wanted to wear a blue business suit and briefcase and walk down Wall Street. And so that was another image that had nothing to do with science or art. But it was just an image. And I remember writing that into my essay for Columbia Business School.
Wow.
I pictured this when I was 9 years old. And
well, there's something about status and security that image has, you know, for sure. I could see why that would be appealing.
How often does that apply to your what you do now as a producer and having your own production company? Like, is it hugely beneficial to have that background?
I will say the network is amazing. I mean, I think you pay for the network when you
that's
go to
what I always hear.
Yeah, for Columbia Business School. But there's certain tools and skill sets that are applicable to everything, and especially producing. I mean, you need to know the budget. You need to know how to manage hundreds of people when you're producing a feature, negotiate with talent, negotiate with managers. And so it's like you're like a mini CEO.
You have. And you said you're Gujarati, right?
Yeah.
So you'd be negotiating your ass off. Question. Yes. I never met a Gujarati in an Indian thing that's not the producer. Let me be honest with you. I'm thinking back, all my Indian projects is a Gujarati producer. And I was like, yep, absolutely.
Well, we got to make the deals, right?
I'm telling you. Got to watch that budget.
Yeah.
So you started.
We're all staying at our hotel.
When did Blue Velocity start?
It started in 2005.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so 11 years ago. And actually, I was working at Disney, and I wanted to do some side projects. And so I started that. And from there, I just got really more involved.
Was there always a focus for when you started Blue Velocity? Was there always something in your head that you wanted to be South Asian-centric? Or was it just, I want to tell stories? Where was your... Because what I heard earlier from you was that there's a sense of activism within the way that you think about stories. Yeah. With Super Duper Princess Heroes is definitely something.
And when you came up with D-Loco and DJ Rico, all activists.
So was that always a part or has it come back now?
No, that was always a part. I from my first film that I did, which was Raspberry Magic, I worked with a writer-director, Lena Pendarker, so a woman, and first time writer-director for...
Oh, cool. Do you mind me asking what ethnicity she was?
Indian. She was South Asian. And I just... the stories resonated, but also I felt a kinship, again, to the community. And I think that keeps happening in every aspect of my life and every era of my life, I guess. I felt like we could do something together and we could also put ourselves on the map. And at the same time, I hadn't seen a movie or a story where you can just be yourself, but you have South Asian people in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's always about an identity crisis or trying to figure out what does it mean to be South Asian.
What a stupid idea.
I know. What? Honestly. Don't do a podcast.
Who's trying to
about
figure
it?
That out? Yeah. Dorks.
But we wanted something that was just, we happen to be South Asian, but we're still telling American stories. And universal stories.
Sometimes that's the most powerful statement about race is to simply have people live it. Like, I got into a fight because I was reading a story outline for a different show. And they were like talking about this character. They were bringing in this boss character, like a boss of a company or something, and they were like, and she's a woman and she's black, and they were saying it like, yeah, we get it, we're being progressive. And I was like, nah, we're like, what's really progressive? Because this boss character had like a small arc and wasn't really, it was just there to like serve the story. And it's right. like, no, why don't you give someone of color an actual arc and let them just be a human being rather exactly. than like, we're past the point where we're excited about Morgan Freeman being God.
Yeah.
Like, we're past that point.
Right.
So yeah, that sounds really exciting.
I mean, that was the genesis of it. And I didn't know anything about producing, quite honestly, at the time. And we learned along the way. But, you know, I think both Lena and I are extremely proud of Raspberry Magic. And if you go on Stars, even today,
wow,
you can see it. And
that's great.
That's amazing.
It's a small movie, but it galvanized so many first and second generation Indian Americans and South Asians to really invest into a film like this and tell these stories. And that's been kind of the catalyst.
Can I ask you a question, though? Because we don't really... This is a thing that you've talked about in your life. Everything was geared towards South Asian-ness. Mm-hmm. We have this podcast because no one really knows what it means to be South Asian. So do you feel like you don't want to do those movies at all? Or is it just like, I want to see one where that's not there? Or like, what exactly was... Am I making any sense here?
No, I think I'm... Is your question that... do you want to do... Do you think it's important to have stories that define yes. what it means to be South Asian?
Oh, I see what you're saying. I think, yeah. I think it had to start that way. Okay. And that's why I think American They See was powerful, mm-hmm. because it had to start that way.
Right.
You do need to have an identity of understanding what it means to be South Asian.
Right.
But I think that's evolved.
Well, let me ask you this then. The premise of this podcast and the premise of something, and maybe coming from our experience, was that we didn't know, and Akash talks beautifully about this. When he was growing up, he was even told to act white or act black. There wasn't, like, he was told to act Indian, but he didn't know what that meant, right? And do you think there is a South Asian identity now, like, that is, that our community agrees with? Do you think that exists?
You know, I think, God, that's a really hard question.
It's the genesis of this whole podcast, so we're not necessarily expecting an answer, but I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I don't know that I think that anymore. I think I was really conflicted growing... Actually, I was never really conflicted growing up. I don't know why I said that. I knew what it meant to be South Asian or what it meant to be Indian.
What did
Indian.
It mean to be back then? What did that mean?
For me specifically, yeah. it meant this culture that I was so... happy to be a part of and privileged to be a part of, where we embraced the values and cultural identities of India for me. But then
what were those for you?
And I guess from my experience, it was the art, the culture, the family values, the celebrations, learning about traditions in our culture. But then
did you grow up speaking Gujarati or Hindi? Was what?
Gujarati.
Gujarati. Are you fluent still? Was that?
Yeah, pretty fluent.
All right, you better than us.
Yeah, we bums.
Yeah, I guess I never ran away from it because I never thought it took away from who I was. I think the only part of it that really affected me was this idea that I needed to be some idealized version of myself.
Interesting. Right. Okay.
That was the only part that I think.
Nuance, though.
Yeah. So that was the only part that affected me. And I don't know that if I were another culture that would have been different, because I think that's part myself and part what I absorbed.
Also, immigrants who come here are badasses. Like, you got here from wherever you're from because you're good enough to get out of there and come here. So there's a certain cultural... We might be worse, but like...
But there's a natural initiative that like, it requires a choice and the chance to like... It's a huge risk and investment on yourself, like, to know that you're going to do that and whatever you're going to do. I think there's inherent... you're already bringing equality when you immigrate somewhere.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
There's like because you made the choice to immigrate.
Leave. Yeah.
That is something in and of itself. I've had this, I always have this theory, and we've talked about it. And you know, Akash and I talk a lot about, as a community, it's our, like, how we move forward is we empower ourselves, you know, and what we do, and it's what you're doing in making our own projects. I have this thing that we are not good as a community of funding our own art. Has that been you've been doing this for 11 years. I don't know if they've all been South Asian, but it sounds like a majority of the projects you're doing are South Asian centric. You actually just did a film, or it was a couple years ago? Or when did you guys, did Miss India in America?
Yeah, we finished in 2015 post-production on Miss India America, and we were in festivals last year.
Full disclosure, I auditioned for that and somehow didn't get this part.
Because so you, you were amazing. You were amazing. You ugly. I don't understand. U-G-L-Y, no alibi.
But
Arjun, you were just too good for the part.
That, I'll take that. But no, so
now, I've been told that by many casting directors. Let me tell you what that means. It means you ain't good enough. You ain't get it because you ain't deserve it. And you ugly.
But so you've done, so you're, that's been a lot of your projects out there. Have you, do you agree with what I just said, that we are, as a community, not good at funding our own art?
I will say 11 years ago, I might have agreed with you. I've done now 3 major South Asian, well, for us, South Asian films with Raspberry Magic, Miss India America, and now the Tiger Hunter. And
are you involved in Tiger Hunter also?
Yeah, I'm the, ooh, when the producer.
Yo, she don't like another, you, dog.
Another project.
Another
project. What's up?
She
what time
likes
it is?
Good looking people.
What up, sci-fi? Can I get a hit? I'm sorry. Okay, so with these 3 projects, though, I'm actually interested in this question.
I've seen so much of our community get behind the arts, and not because they feel like they're about to make a buck or two. It's more because they feel like if we don't tell our stories, someone else will. Mm. So we want to empower you to tell our stories.
This has been a bad 90 seconds for Arjun.
That's exciting.
Yo, you got called ugly twice.
Is that money coming from our generation, or is it coming from the generation above? Where
both.
Is that money?
Both. Both.
You can be both, Doug. You just stay looking dumb the last 2 minutes. It's crazy.
Jesus. Literally crazy.
But it's definitely not consistent across the board. So you're right. We're not at that level where I see sometimes in Jewish American communities or other communities where it feels like they band even more towards a goal, you know, whatever it is. But I do see it in our community. And I do see people coming together. And we were just in Dallas for the Dallas Film Festival, the Dallas South Asian Film Festival.
And my friend won an award there. Shouts to Prabhakar.
Yeah, and we were the opening, Miss India America was the opening night film there. And we saw this incredible community, and so many people came up to us and said, let us know when you have the next film project.
Awesome.
We want to get involved.
That's amazing.
And so I think there's some value. They're seeing themselves on screen, which I think a lot of aunties and uncles appreciate, but then a lot of people of our generation are like, okay, this isn't just an idea. 10 years ago, 20 years ago, it felt like an idea. And it was like, what does that mean? But now you're seeing yourself on TV. You're seeing that your kids could be on TV.
Right.
And I think that's happening more and more.
The reason I said it was because I remember that I had an experience where I got to be at Ambani through a party for like the SAG nominees that had been in the last 10 years or 12 years when Life of Pi was happening. So this was about 2-3 years ago. And I just remember that Life of Pi was an amazing thing. Ambani, like, and that company was able to enter into Hollywood through that medium. And I was just always stunned that the next choice of a film that they did was Vampire School something. It was a nonsensical film. There was no South Asian centric at all. You went from Life of Pi, and I understand the need to diversify, but like, there was nothing that was brought. They didn't even like fight to have someone that was South Asian in that story. Right. And for me, it was like, oh, cool. This was another product of me, the mentality that, you know, Ambani's coming in from India and now saying, oh, let me now get to whiteness as a thing. So it's really exciting to hear for me that like our community here is not necessarily, like maybe 10 years ago we were when you were doing Raspberry Magic, but now is moving away from that. That's really exciting.
I think it's exciting. I also will say that it's not easy.
Right.
And it's still not
easy. But it's
easy.
Never going to be easy to get money for a film. I mean, that's like, that's an inherent thing.
Yeah. But it's also not easy to get distribution for a film. And I think that's also part of it, too. And I do think, and, you know, a lot of people, it's hard for a lot of people to hear when I say this. But yes, if certain characters were white in some of our films, if we changed some storylines to integrate more whiteness, we would get distributed even more widely.
Yeah.
Or we just have to have big stars. And so there's still this sense of it's not just story. And I think in some of these Hollywood films, it's just about story. It doesn't really matter who's in it. They're still going to get into theatrical releases. But it's not the case with at least minority represented films. And we're, while we may not be just as South Asians, we're not going to get the kind of distribution necessarily that we would. And I hope over the next few years, we can change that.
Do you see a difference from Raspberry Magic to Miss India America with, from a standpoint of, because those are about, you know, 8-9 years apart.
Yeah, 6-7 years apart. Yeah.
Have you seen a difference from the distribution side on that or
a little bit, but not much. And that's a struggle. Like, I feel like from the financing angle, we're getting better. I feel like from the talent side, we're getting better. I mean, there's the fact that Miss India America has 32 characters, of which 95% of them are South Asian, and that we could try out sometimes 7 or 8 people for a specific role or even more, just shows the expansiveness of the industry.
I mean, there's a ton of South Asians out there, like, acting everywhere. It's really quite remarkable.
It's amazing. And so that's just a proliferation already. So now I think the next proliferation is, how do we really distribute this content? How do we get it out to our community? How do we feel like people like you, Akash and Arjun, your age, are excited about seeing these films?
Isn't that much easier now because of social media and the fact that we can grassroots it so much more easily and things can get passed around so much more easily?
I would think so, but then how do you start to make the money back, right? I mean, that's the other thing where it gets around.
Well, I'm just saying get the word out in terms of like, hey, check
let's
out
get
this
the word out, but getting a, if you, that's only, I think what you're saying matters more when you independently distribute the film. Because what when you have a distributor, and you can correct me on any of this because I'm speaking from my naive experience, but you get a distributor that takes on the financial requirement of selling the film and like putting it in theaters and XYZ, and then you have to convince them that there's going to be a market.
Yeah.
Oh, right. I see what you're saying.
And that's where the trip up is right now. Is that you have to convince someone to take the risk so that there is a market.
Yeah.
If you independently distribute, you have a chance of sidestepping that risk, but then you take on the entire financial risk upon that, which is dangerous.
Yeah, which is tough, especially with independent films. And so you're fighting that battle. And I feel like you don't normally fight that battle. For a film like Miss India America to fight that battle, if it were all white, it would be no brainer.
I mean, that's Miss Congeniality.
Yeah, exactly, like, right?
Minus the, you know, FBI storyline.
So it's interesting. So we're still at that. I think that's still the part where I struggle. I'm so excited about all these other steps. And there's so many people who want to help and so many people who want to be part of the community. We had a Kickstarter campaign for Miss India America.
That's awesome. Yeah, Kickstarter crowdsourcing has become really great.
And it's been amazing to see the support from all over the country and the world, actually, that came together to support a film like that.
So let me ask you this question, because we did a micro-budget film, I remember, and I was talking about this. We made it for like $100,000 in New York. It was a long time ago. And they were one of the people that was in it, they were excited because they knew they could sell it to Argentina based off of this guy's cachet for like that much money. Mm-hmm. Has selling to India, like the rights, is that something? Is India expressing interest in films that are made here about Indian Americans or not? Because I would think that if you do a micro budget, or even if you do like a $1 million film here and you sell it for like the rights, distribution rights out there, could you not get a bulk of that back?
Yeah, you would hope so. But I don't think that's we will consume Bollywood content. And I'm not saying maybe the three of us in this room, but
I will.
But okay, there you go.
but like as a
society here in India, I mean in America, we will consume that content. So will Canadians, so will UK and others.
And Russia.
And Russia, everywhere around the world. But the other way around, it's India wants blockbusters. And so, but the younger and younger audiences, so people like us, our age over there,
They want stuff like this, but they're going to get it on iTunes. They're not going to get.
But they are, the multiplexes, especially in bigger cities, are becoming more interesting to them, and they do like going out. So there is an audience starting to grow now.
I got a cousin who wants to be an actor. This is semi-related, but he likes shooting like indie films that are like kind of dark and like that's happening over
that's
there.
That's happening for sure.
And we're not also consuming all the indie films that India has either. Right. Which, if you start to look at some of those films, it's amazing because we only see some of these bigger titles as well.
Right.
And so there is a market. There definitely is a market. There's definitely an exchange. Is a monetary value this like that impressive? Not yet. And right. I think that's the part.
So that's the thing that that continues to hopefully grow.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. We don't have a ton of time left. And we left out, you know, relationship, which is definitely something that we were interested in.
We're going to get to it next.
We're going to get to it with your husband, but just so that you don't have a voice in it. Maybe we'll bring you back to join in for some of that. But you are married.
Mm-hmm.
He's a South Asian gentleman.
Yes, he is.
Was that important to you?
You know, I...
Be honest.
I will be honest. I actually had... I did date... I actually don't want to sound like I've dated so much, but I've dated Indian guys or South Asian guys.
Why? What's wrong with sounding like you've dated a lot?
No, it's good.
Uncles and aunties might be listening. That's wrong with it.
But I actually never really had this notion that to marry an Indian guy.
Okay.
And neither did my parents. For all the Indianness that I grew up with or South Asianness I grew up with, my parents kept telling me, marry the guy that makes you happy. Word. Because that's the most important thing. And it helped that I have some sister-in-laws and brother-in-laws that are not Indian.
Right.
And they picked up the language, and they're like these star nephews and nieces and niece-in-laws and nephew-in-laws for my parents. And they're always like, you know, you can do that too if you want. Like, mm-hmm. we just want you to meet someone that...
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's really beautiful. The last question we'll ask you before we leave you, we let you out of here. You guys are married for a little while. There's talk of children.
Mm-hmm.
When you, the way you think about raising your children, and if you haven't talked about it, just prying, tell me to shut the fuck up. Is it important for you when you think about raising your children with a South Asian identity? How do you feel about that? What do you feel like your responsibility is as a parent going on? Or a prospective parent?
I mean, I would want my children to know the culture we came from.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they want to embrace it or not, I will let them decide.
Mm-hmm.
But I do want to be able to give them the tools and the knowledge. And because I think it's just so important to not forget where we came from.
Do you know what that would look like for you? Would it be traveling to India? Would it be like putting them in birth, not to him? Would it be,
I would love to travel to India with them and show them kind of where their great grandparents came from.
Right.
Their grandparents, and even where Sorb and I both really enjoyed a lot of our years. I mean, we spent on and off, him separately, but we spent on and off a lot of time in India. And so just for them to understand that connection that we as parents have. But then, yes, I would want them to know about Bar Nat Dim if they're interested, tabla, whatever it is.
Tabla. Yeah. So dope.
Yeah. It's like things like that, depending on, you know, if I have girls, boys, whatever it is. I'd want them to be a part of the culture and to meet other people as well that have that same culture and understand what Diwali means and holy. Whether they decide to make it an integral part of their life or not, I'd leave it up to them. But I think it's nice for them to know.
That's beautiful. Well, let everybody know if you have a Twitter where they can find you at. If not, let us know when the Miss India America is dropping, or let us know what's going on.
Yeah. Definitely check out Miss India America. It'll be in theaters March 25th, Friday at in DC, in San Jose, and in Chicago.
Beautiful.
Amazing.
And my Twitter is artsycitygal.
Nice.
And I've got, there's all kinds of social media. I don't even know.
Get a Snapchat. That's the new one.
Oh my God.
I don't know if I can even do it. I've got enough.
I know. All right, beautiful.
Oh, thank you guys so much for letting me be on this podcast.
Thank you. I mean, I feel like we got to get a part two to talk about this time in India. I mean, so we might be hitting you back up for a repeat.
I could do one more shout out.
Please.
Do it.
SuperDuperPrincessHeroes.com.
Of course. Yeah, beautiful. Check it out.
I'm excited to check that out. That sounds creepy. All right. We'll be on here next week. Actually, next week we're going to be dropping her husband. So you're definitely going to want to tune in for that to hear his response to some of these questions.
Yeah.
But in general, this is your part where you say,
Hey, keep tweeting at us at American Daisies. Email us, AmericanDaisiesPodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to the podcast, rate the podcast, review the podcast. Talk to us, you idiots.
There you go. As always, I'm Arjun.
I'm Akash.
And we'll catch you in a couple days.
God bless.